Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Keyam Bhakuta Ayata Daiviva Nayuta Suri Rayo Mayas Tu Me Bhartur Nanya Me Pivi Mohini Keyam Bhakula Ayata Daivivana Yutasuri Rayo Mayas Tume Bhartur Nanya Me Pivi Mohini. Please chant. Ka Hu Iyam This Va Or Kuta From Where Ayata Has come, Daivi, whether demigod, Va, or Nari, woman, Uta, or Asuri, demoness, Praya, in most cases, Maya, illusory energy, Astu, she must be. May, my, Bhartu, of the Master, Lord Krishna, na, not, anya, any other, may, my, api, certainly, bimohini, bewilderer. Translation and purport by Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Who is this mystic power, and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna, for who else can bewilder me? Please repeat. Who is this mystic power, and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna. For who else can bewilder me? Purport. Balaram was surprised. This extraordinary show of affection, he thought, was something mystical performed either by the demigods or some wonderful man. Otherwise, how could this wonderful change take place? This Maya might be some Rakshasi Maya, he thought. But how can Rakshasi Maya have any influence upon me? This is not possible. Therefore, it must be the Maya of Krishna. He thus concluded that the mystical change must have been caused by Krishna, whom Balaram considered his worshipable personality of Godhead. He thought, it was arranged by Krishna, and even I could not check its mystic power. Thus Balaram understood that all these boys and calves were only expansions of Krishna. Mukam karoti vachalam pangam karate gram yakripata maham bande shivaram dinatana. So this is the culmination of the pastime of Lord Brahma stealing the boys and calves. Almost. There's the prayers by Lord Brahma. His suitable humility, being confronted with the ultimate reality, But in this particular verse, the interesting takeaway is that, of course, Lord Balaram was never taken away by Lord Brahma. So he remained with Krishna the entire time, which, of course, we know is only a moment in the time of Lord Brahma, but 1 year. So for that whole entire time, even Balaram was bewildered. And apparently, what gave it up was seeing this, what he considered to be unnatural affection. Because usually such affection is reserved for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was a giveaway. That all these cows and cowherds, mothers, fathers, friends, relatives, all were paying the same attention that they would previously pay only to Krishna. Of course, they were continuing to pay this affection towards Krishna because Krishna himself had assumed the forms of the cowherd boys. But Lord Balaram especially, for him to pose these questions and to consider alternatives to Krishna's mystic power, like the bewildering power of some demoness or some rakshasi, this is also very interesting. Because nothing can bewilder the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore we understand its nature within the realm of Krishna's yoga maya, this lila pastimes. And this is also for the enjoyment of Lord Balaram. He was also enjoying this, just like a person who is sitting in the audience and watching a play. He's not on the stage, but he's enjoying seeing the actors portray whatever reality they happen to be absorbed in. So, and sometimes we have a special appreciation when we feel one with the performance. We actually become so much absorbed that we feel like we're part of the play or part of the movie. So this is how convincing. Of course, there's nothing left to chance. The Supreme Lord's mystic power has no limitations. Whatever can be conceived, materially speaking, we sometimes are amazed at so-called computer-generated, you know, special effects. They make everything seem so real. So that is also a type of illusion, no doubt. When you can sit inside of a theater and watch for 2 hours something being put on the screen which is totally immaterial, but yet take some enjoyment. So this is just the minute aspect of our enjoying mood. You know, that we're also attempting this anandamaya vyasa, that because we are eternally pleasure-seeking, so therefore, in every possible area of human endeavor, everyone is doing whatever they're doing based on some reciprocation. They don't do something without any return, you can say. No selfless. Only in devotional service do we see the example of selfless devotional service and understand the benefits. Otherwise, everyone is looking for something temporary. They don't know temporary. But somehow or other, they're fooled. Just like the Prabhupada used to tell us the story about the chewing the chewed. And of course, until we came to India in the 70s, we had no idea what that meant, chewing the chewed. Until you watch the cow or the ass at the sugar cane stand, chewing the empty stalks left over after they've been run through the machine a dozen times. But why do they do that? They do it because there's a promise of enjoyment. There's nothing there, but the promise of enjoyment is there, just like so many other bewildering things in the material world. We look at something, and because it holds a promise of enjoyment, therefore we pursue it. Whether it's money, fame, men, women, all these things, they hold a promise of enjoyment. But this is a promise that is never kept. As soon as one chases that phantasmagoria, that mirage, it simply moves further away. When we used to drive to the desert in Makrana, it is so hot that there's a thermal layer, and it reflects images which are very far away that bounce up into the ether and then again down. So you're actually looking at a city that exists but just not there. And it seems to be shimmering, something golden. And people will chase these mirages. Sometimes it's the mirage of the oasis and the promise of water to a desperately thirsty person. So in the material world, we're all desperately thirsty for true enjoyment. But yet we're chasing these mirages, these phantasmagorias. And we're not using our intelligence to see behind the illusion. So anyway, Krishna has reserved that. Only the devotees here, only the devotees everywhere who are practicing their utmost, you can say. There's no room for halfway. What's the point? If you do anything halfway in the material world, they have special terms for that. You know, we won't repeat them here. But nobody does anything. You'll be ridiculed. You'll be seen as a fool. When one comes to spiritual life, he should not be complacent. He should endeavor to that extent that he is capable, whatever that is. Internally, everyone knows his capacity. So it is not that someone else can say, you have less or you have more. It can be seen. The spiritual master has intimate knowledge. Everyone remembers in the presence of Srila Prabhupada how he could look into us and reveal everything as if we were, all the layers of false ego were being removed and revealing that what we were trying to retain, some minute independence. But as soon as Prabhupada gave us that look, independence was finished. And if you were fortunate, surrender was at hand. And then with surrender, certainly there's opportunity to go further and further and deeper and deeper. But as we were always cautioned, first deserve, then desire. This caution was given by Srila Prabhupada at a very crucial time in the movement. The movement was expanding like anything. 1975. Temples were opened, 108 temples, devotees were bursting at the seams, the temples. There were buses all over America going up and down, college to college. And we were printing Chaitanya Charitamrita, 17 volumes in 3 months. And the editors, very prestigious position in the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust at that time. All of our editors, we had closed the editing shop at Brooklyn, Henry Street, ISKCON Press, and everyone had moved to Los Angeles, June of 1975, to concentrate on Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Sanskrit editors were held in high esteem. They were very, you could tell just by the way they walked. But something special took place. They formed something called the Gopi Bhava Club. Okay, try to imagine. This is 1975. No one had been in the movement more than 10 years. You know? And many of us much less. But they had formed a Gopi Bhava Club. So one of my godbrothers, who was not participating, but who was very concerned, he went to Srila Prabhupada and said, "Srila Prabhupada, your Sanskrit editors are, you know, doing something I feel you should be aware of." And when he told Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada was very concerned. And he said, immediately bring them to his room in Los Angeles. And when Prabhupada brings you to the room without advance warning like that, you know it's pretty bad. You know, just go to Prabhupada's room. Like going to the principal's office, go to Prabhupada's room. So Prabhupada sat and said, "What is this? What is this?" And they tried to justify that Srila Prabhupada, because what's the benefit of being a Sanskrit editor? You're reading all the transcriptions. You're doing the transcribing from Prabhupada's dictaphone. You're adding the diacritics where necessary. You're doing the word for word. So you're getting everything in advance. You're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita before anyone else in the movement. They're feeling themselves very special. Said, "Prabhupada, we're just reading your books." "But what is this that you're doing, this Gopi Bhava?" I said, "But Prabhupada, we're just trying to, you know, this is, you're saying in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is the topmost platform." And Prabhupada took his fist and he banged the desk. And that's when he said, "First deserve, then desire." And he said, "When you go to a pharmacist shop like Gupta Medical across the street, the shelves are lined with medicine, up and down. You don't even know what they are. You cannot just go in and pick and choose what you want." This is Prabhupada explaining to them after he banged the desk. He says, "You have to have a qualified person, a qualified doctor, to prescribe the medicine. First deserve, then desire." So it was a very important lesson for the entire movement. It spread like wildfire. There was no WhatsApp, there was no internet, there was nothing. But there were telephones. And the telephones were ringing off the hook across the country, across the world. You know, we had overstepped. You know, this is... So that tendency may still be there, to overstep. You know, when we... At the same time, okay, this is another interesting thing. So, this is all happening. So when this happened, what did Prabhupada do? He stopped translating Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he translated Nectar of Instruction. And he finished right here, in September 1975. Kishtabaram Temple. He was so concerned that we were jumping ahead. He needed to bring us back down and put our feet on the ground. Vacha Vega, Manasakota Vega, Jiva Vega, Mudra Pashtava. Okay, the basics. He was basically saying, "Who do you think you are? You're not even out of first grade yet." And this must have appeared quite, in one sense, amusing to Prabhupada to see his disciples, like I said, most of whom had not been in the movement more than 10 years at that time, but trying to enter into the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna through the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's a lesson well learned. 40 years ago or today, it's the same. You know, when we're trying to understand this mystic power, you know, that bewilders even, you know, Lord Balaram, primary expansion, not different from Krishna, except for the color of his dhoti. But somehow or other, he was under the spell. So therefore, Krishna is Yogeshwar. He's the master of all mystics. You know? So we're very, I believe Prabhupada translated up to the 14th chapter in 10th canto. 13th is the end, this is the last. Well, that's, I mean, up to the 14th. So we're very fortunate to have had that. And in his foresight, to have concentrated early on, after his third heart attack, to give us Krishna book and teachings of Lord Chaitanya, just in case. Just in case. We could have access to the Bhaktivedanta purport so expertly integrated into the prose and poetry of Krishna book. Such a wonderful gift. And that year, actually, 1975, we did a Christmas marathon in New York City. We distributed 10,000 Krishna books in the course of a few days. 10,000 Krishna books. It was probably the largest single distribution up till that point, for sure. I don't know how long it lasted after that. And we were doing everything in our power to distribute these Krishna books. You know, practically for any donation. But one has to be a little cautious. Something given cheap is not valued, Prabhupada told us. But that the potency of Krishna book, this is the real mystic power that has come down from the spiritual world, Goloka Prema. Just right into the hands of the common person. I think everyone here can remember the first time they ever got a Krishna book and started to read it. You know, and it was just, it's like seeing behind the scenes of the material world. You're understanding that this is the reality. And now I am experiencing the illusion. Let me try to appreciate something different from the hackneyed academic pursuit of material knowledge. And it converted a whole generation. George Harrison was, who knows how much benefit he gets for printing the Krishna book. But this is the... We can present it like that, that if one wants to know the nature of transcendence, then he simply has to read Krishna book. And he will be convinced. There is and even, I'm not sure what the practice is here, but at night, in every temple, in Prabhupada's presence, every night we would read Krishna book and take hot milk. He considered it to be such an important function. He didn't tell us to read Chaitanya Charitamrita or Bhagavad Gita. No. Krishna book. Every night, hot milk. And if you're lucky, popcorn. In Henry Street, we had popcorn. So these sweet days, they can bring about, you know, when you remember how everyone was so fully engaged. There was no such thing as being in a temple anywhere where somebody was not doing service. It didn't happen. Of course, it's just two brownstones, small buildings, it's not a big campus. But if someone was not doing anything, it was immediately understood that he was in Maya. You know, it's just, it was unheard of. Even as that lecture in Mayapur in 76, it is not all right, the title of the lecture. I have to commend the devotees who would title the lectures. They would extract something from the Prabhupada's lecture and they would give it a title. The title of this lecture was, "It's Not All Right." And what was not all right was that someone is coming to the temple, simply eating and sleeping. Prabhupada coined the term, hotel for lazy and crazy fellows. Said, and he cautioned the GBC. He said, all the GBC should take care at this, otherwise the society would be destroyed. Such persons are coming, not willing to be engaged. So we have to remember our prime directive, that how do we become servants of Krishna? We serve. It's not rocket science. They have a, I learned something from our Russian congregation. We were putting something together, doing renovation. There's lots of renovation in our New York temple due to years of neglect. And the tendency is to do things as good as possible, because in America they have a saying, you know, if something's worth doing, it's worth doing right. But in Russia they have a different saying. If you're spending too much time working on something, fixing it, they'll tap you and they say, Peru, it's not a rocket ship. In other words, it's not going into space, doesn't have to be airtight, doesn't have to bring you up and bring you back. But all encapsulated, it's not a spaceship. So don't over-endeavor. That was another lesson. Just do what according to the necessity, but without any consideration for trying to do something by simply to satisfy the temple commander. Let me do the minimum. No. We should always try to do our best. And then Prabhupada said it very clearly. He said, don't try to see Krishna. Just act in such a way that Krishna will see you. If one keeps this in his mind, then how can he go wrong at any time? Just try to act in such a way that Krishna will see you. And we have opportunity at every moment in this regard. Especially, the temple is meant for service. Temple is only meant for service. It's not meant for anything else. You know. Of course, we're seeing the deities, and the deities are seeing us. And when we greet them in the morning, we present ourselves that we're here for your service. I'm not here for eye exercise. All right? The famous story Srila Bhakti Prabhupada relates, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta having class, and the conch shell blew, the curtains opened, and one, I don't know if he was a disciple or a guest, got up and he walked to the other end of the room to have darshan. The lecture continued, and after some time this person came back and sat down again. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, oh, what did you see? And the person related, oh, the deity is wearing beautiful golden mukut and this very nice dress and colorful and nice garland and so many bangles. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, what did he say? He said, simply eye exercise. Simply eye exercise. You're looking, but what are you seeing? You got up from the hearing from a pure devotee. Of course, maybe he was a guest, maybe he didn't understand the etiquette involved. A saintly person is sitting there. He should have heard what happened to Ramahashan Sutta. You know, he would have maybe had second thoughts about it. You know. But, you know, this is our dilemma. We think we're so much advanced that we can neglect to read or hear and just be satisfied by what our eyes are showing us. But this is not, we have to be careful. Yes, we appreciate the wonderful service of the pujaris in decorating Radha Shyam, Krishna Balaram, Gaur-Nitai. Yes, that's how we appreciate their service. To make everything beautiful, to impress upon those who come, so that they can get a glimpse of how one acts in the presence of God. Just see how nicely. Are there any deities dressed as nicely as our deities? No. Not to this day, even though they imitate. Even though they steal some of our pujaris. But they have to pay them. It's not the same. It's never the same. It will never be the same. Because here it is done with love and devotion. So in all things, whatever we do, we had to present that verse to the city of New York in order to get permission to conduct affairs in the Washington Square Park during the corona. They wanted to restrict us. They couldn't restrict the parade because it's a religious parade. We were the only entity allowed to march down Fifth Avenue in 2021. Everyone else was stopped. Puerto Rican Day Parade, St. Patrick's Day Parade, all these other parades, because they're all cultural. But because our parade is registered as religious, they had to let us have the parade. And the police actually like us. They don't mind us. But the Parks Department was getting a little funny. They were kept saying, no, this and that, you can't distribute food. I said, it's part of our function. We distribute food to 8,000 people. And they were like, they were freaking out. They said, you have to show us where it in the your scripture it says you can do that. So I sent them that verse, Yad Kiroshia, Snasia, Joshita Dasia, on our letterhead. I had my lawyer sign it, though I didn't sign it. So our lawyer was preaching, at least from their perspective. And they said, oh, okay. If it says it in your scripture, I guess you can do it. So there's always a way to penetrate the obstacles given by the material energy for our Krishna conscious actions, right? When Toshar Krishna first made the application in 1976, and they asked him, what kind of floats? A float is what you bring on a parade. It's usually not very big. Sometimes it's just a flatbed truck decorated. And he told them, three hand-pulled carts. He didn't elaborate. He didn't say they were 50 feet tall, that they were 10 tons each, that the wheels were 10 feet high. No. He just said three hand-pulled carts, and they gave us the permit. And when they saw the carts, they were very surprised, of course. Right? Because they had been tricked in a gentle way. They never held it against us. They always liked us. The next year after Jayananda Prabhu passed away, I would always go to the permit office with him and we would pull the permit. The next year when I went, and Jayananda had a way with interacting with people just in general. People that you would not normally pay much attention to, like the clerk behind the desk who's issuing the permit. It's a routine matter. They just do it because it's their job. He would make that person feel like they were giving all the sanction that was just due to them. We would always bring the prasadam. And so the lady, the first thing she asked me when I went to apply for the permit is, where's Johnny? Because that's how his name was Johnny Ananda. That's how he introduced himself to everybody, Johnny Ananda. I said, where's Johnny? So I had to tell her that he passed away. And this lady left the desk to cry. Pretty amazing how a devotee can interact and evoke those emotions. So our preaching should never be too elevated in the sense that we're talking above people's heads, trying to impress them with our philosophical knowledge of Gopi Bhav or something else. But we should try to touch their hearts with, as devotees, so that they appreciate what is a devotee. Because they will be inclined then when someone approaches them with a book or they come to one of our restaurants. So this is sometimes it's a little bit of a tedious process, cultivation. It takes time. I always appreciated having an opportunity to do that type of service, whether it was running our Govinda's restaurant or building Prabhupada Samadhi, interacting with the local whatever, was an opportunity to show them that devotees are not some strange animal that, you know, we're here to exploit the resources of whatever. Because they're always suspicious. I mean, they used to think our chakra on the top of the dome was an antenna for a shortwave radio. I mean, they would tell us this, frankly, fully believing that we were all CIA. This is, you know, the 1970s, 1980s. So they, for them to actually have a relationship with a devotee and to know that they're just normal people was how we opened up many doors to get things done without having to pay enormous bribes, which is typically the shortcut. But the real challenge is to get it done by making friends with them. Whoever it is. Big, big men, small clerks behind the desk. And we got a little bit off Balaram being bewildered. But we'll read the shloka again just to bring it back on track here. Who is this mystic power and where has she come from? That would be considered politically incorrect nowadays. Who is this mystic power and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna. For who else can bewilder me? Class goes to 9. So we have 10 minutes for questions. Yes, Maharaj, but loud because here. It's one of the four letters, you know. We got, you know, from Yamaraj. Everyone knows the four letters. Hearing, sight.
You have given us many instructive lessons from your class, which was wonderful. I also especially liked how you gave the analogy of a drama and somebody sitting and playing, you know, on a theater. And Balaram is seeing this whole drama in relationship to Krishna's mystic powers. Could you kindly share how you were bewildered by Srila Prabhupada?
How we were what?
How you specifically was bewildered. Like Srila Prabhupada bewildered us. So.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada bewildered us. Or you can bring it under the devotees, how they were bewildered.
I mean, difficult to say in that context. I had been reading Gita and listening to Prabhupada's lectures. When the opportunity came to see him face to face, the temple president had, you know, he engaged me nicely. You know, we were just new devotees. But somehow or other, we were able to get close to Prabhupada in a manner befitting our lower station. We were assigned to clean Srila Prabhupada's rooms and to do general repair work. I was the handyman of the temple. So, and he...
In New York?
In New York. This is Henry Street, is our Brooklyn, first Brooklyn temple, after 61 Second Avenue. So in seeing Prabhupada's lifestyle, in one sense, I was struck by the simplicity. I was so impressed that here's a person who commanded so much knowledge, and if he wanted, unlimited power through thousands of disciples. Yet here he was, going from temple to temple. He had an almirah with some cloth in it. He carried everything else in his little valise, suitcase, much of which we have still in Brooklyn on his desk, his original desk from Henry Street, which we used to clean, but not move anything. Very strict instructions, don't move anything. And so that intimacy, and I didn't consider it intimate at the time. I didn't understand fully who Srila Prabhupada was. But having that service to clean the pure devotees' quarters, bathroom, whatever else is there, I felt that somehow or other he was giving us a special benediction. You know, everyone wanted to go on the morning walks. That was a thing, because you got to be seen by Prabhupada. But you really didn't hear anything, unless you were right up front. You were just in the back chanting japa. So I realized I would rather be cleaning Srila Prabhupada's quarters and getting his remnants than out there pretending to be something I wasn't. I had no questions to ask, and we weren't anybody. But the nectar of cleaning Prabhupada's quarters was more than sufficient to bring us closer to the menial servant that we were attempting to achieve, that status. And Prabhupada recognized it. It's not that he didn't recognize. Gargamuni Maharaj at that time. Because, you know, the mind, you know, we're reading that verse. Pachavega Manichakro, a sober person. So we were not, and we were barely sober persons. So to clean the bathrooms was not, you know, it was a little, you know, different from what we were normally used to doing. It wasn't our particular thing. So we were cleaning the bathrooms. And I was probably chanting the Maha Mantra a little louder than I should have to try to, you know, overcome the mind's, you know, interjections. Because what does the mind say? Why are you cleaning this bathroom? What are you doing here? What is this? You could be doing something else. You could be enjoying. And so and then I saw these lotus feet walking into the bathroom because I was chanting too loud. And they, as soon as they came in, I stopped, paid my obeisances on the wet floor, and, you know, I didn't want to open the stall door. I was just dressed in a gumsha. And Prabhupada walked back out. And then Gargamuni came later and told me, he says, Prabhupada was wondering who is chanting in the bathroom. You know, maybe he thought somebody was chanting japa in the bathroom. So he was wondering who is chanting in the bathroom. So these things, just sweet after the fact, you relish any of your memories with Srila Prabhupada. So, and hopefully they anchor you to the reality that I'm his eternal servant, birth after birth, so that we don't get too far off the path. It happens. You know, Prabhupada said, Rasagraha, for one who, having once tasted nectar of Krishna's lotus feet, he can never leave. Rasagraha, he can never leave. He'll always come back. But maybe not in this lifetime. So somehow or other, we try, at least in this lifetime, Prabhupada requested us. It's really not that difficult once you get past the 50-year mark. Or maybe it's 40 years. No, it's not. It's not difficult at all. We're just joking. In an instant, Prabhupada said, in that famous lecture in Australia, how long does it take for one to surrender? How long does it take? And Prabhupada said, in an instant. In an instant. We surrender. From this day forward, right? Any other questions, Maharaj?
I just wanted to say, how do you nicely emphasize that there should have proper simplicity is bewildering. That's one. And I really liked your answer, which was also very simple. Thank you very much. but I think we have a question or comment.
Hare Krishna. Just wanted to thank you for a very wonderful lecture. It became clear why Srila Prabhupada went to New York to start a society. You represent everything the people of New York City are like, friendly, down to earth, and hardworking. The other day, a devotee asked me, Prabhupada's disciples, they seem so happy, so ecstatic. You know, how do you have this ecstasy after so many years? And again, you exhibited it very much. It's, we're happy serving Srila Prabhupada. That's all we want to do. And that is our happiness. It is our ecstasy. So just hearing from you, coming here from where you're doing your service after 50 years, you exhibit all of that. And again, I see why Prabhupada, everything began in New York City. And as we know, our God brothers and God sisters who were there, that's what everyone is like. So thank you. Hare Krishna.
Any other quick questions? We have, looks like, 2 minutes. There's one.
Hare Krishna. What is the statement that is like, you write a message that Krishna would like to see you, and you give this high exercise example, but let us say as a practitioner, how a practitioner would realize that he is acting in such a way that Krishna is seeing?
I mean, we, Prabhupada mentioned that when we see the deities, that impression should stay with us. It's not that we're doing it for any other purpose, but that in the course of our lives, if we can have that impression within our heart, that can be brought out to the forefront of our mind at difficult times, then we're sure to be saved in every circumstance because Krishna is there. He's there within our hearts, but we're learning how to bring him into the forefront. This is the, I mean, there's so much psychology here and there, and people call it subconscious, subliminal, this or that, the other thing. But if we're concentrating on the deities to that extent, and it's being done for a pure purpose, to carry that image and to bring it in our travels and preaching, so that we remember that, who am I representing? Who am I representing? You know, there's a, we should never do anything to embarrass the spiritual master or the society. It's a great responsibility, and we have to carry it very carefully. It should not be taken lightly. Prabhupada used to tell us, and with regards to life membership preaching, you know, everything had to be done very nicely. He said, trust is like a china plate. Once broken, it can never be put back together the same way. So in all of our actions, we have to consider that. Trust is one of the most, obviously, the most important ingredient in any relationship. So what to speak of our relationship with Srila Prabhupada, you know, or any of our Varma Padaksha gurus, you know, or in that sense. Trust. They have to know who we are, what we're capable of, what, not that this person comes and creates some disturbance. And that's what he was saying in Mayapur. Don't let such persons come. You know. Be careful, take your association seriously. Be good association, seek good association. You know, these things multiply exponentially. You know, this is our sadhu sangha. Any other? I think the time is up. and breakfast is waiting. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.